It is by no means clear if the House of Representatives today will go along with streamlining the Obama administration's authority to negotiate a new trade deal. From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. This is a crucial day for President Obama's trade agenda. The House is expected to vote on a package of deals that are crucial to pave the way for the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the TPP, overhauling trade rules with 12 countries. Marketplace's Tracy Samuelson is here. Tracy, it's all about this Trans-Pacific deal, right? But that's not exactly what the House is set to vote on. So what is on the schedule then?
First up is a vote on trade adjustment assistance. This is a program that's supposed to help workers who might lose their jobs or be otherwise negatively affected by a trade deal. Republicans, while they are generally more in favor of trade deals than Democrats, they don't like this piece of the puzzle. They tend to think it's a costly handout for labor groups. Democrats typically oppose trade deals, but having this assistance in place can make these deals a little bit more palatable for them.
And if this passes today, then what?
That would pave the way for trade promotion authority, a vote on trade promotion authority. This would give the president a kind of honey-do list of things Congress wants to see in a trade deal, and Congress would then commit to giving trade agreements a yes or no vote without amendments or filibusters. If these two votes pass, we then move a giant step forward with the Trans-Pacific Partnership. If they don't, its future looks uncertain.
All right. So how's it looking? Does the president, you think, have the votes?
It's going to be kind of a nail-biter. Both White House officials and labor union leaders were on the Hill yesterday, still pushing their points of view. Interestingly, the AFL-CIO is urging Democrats to vote against trade adjustment assistance, even though this is a program they've supported for years to help workers hurt by trade deals. Now, they strategically think that if they can kill this assistance program, they can kill the promotion authority too, and then the Pacific deal starts to fall apart like dominoes.
Fall apart. All right. Marketplace's Tracy Samuelson, thank you. This has been a fine year for U.S. air carriers. The fuel prices are low. There aren't all that many airlines left, and they're raking in the profits generally. Although United stock is up, stock in Southwest, Delta, and American Airlines are down sharply this week amid concern that airlines will overreact to the good times and mess it all up for their investors. Tim Fitzsimmons has more.
The basics are good for the airline industry. The planes are fuller and they're flying with fewer empty seats. And as you know, fuel prices are extremely low. Joe Sweeterman, a transportation professor at DePaul University in Chicago, says demand has been strong and ticket prices low.
So the fares out there are actually pretty attractive. And we really thought this was going to be a summer where airlines could, in effect, rake it in.
And investors don't like it when airlines cut prices if it isn't clear that will result in greater market share. In fact, in the past, it's given airlines quite the stomachache when their expansion gets whacked by a spike in fuel prices or a reduction in consumer demand.
Investors are worried that airlines are just going to put too much supply into the marketplace and basically grow more quickly than the economy.
Seth Kaplan is managing partner of Airline Weekly, an industry publication.
And when we look at the schedules for the next bunch of months and into early 2016, airlines are indeed looking to grow more rapidly than the economy.
He says growing too fast means reduced profits and grumpy investors. In Washington, I'm Tim Fitzsimmons for Marketplace.
Marketplace is a nonprofit, listener-supported service. To keep our coverage strong and relevant, please make a tax-deductible gift to Marketplace today. Your gift, in any amount, counts twice, thanks to a dollar-for-dollar match from Newman's Own Foundation. Donate at marketplace.org by June 30th. Last night, Netflix surprised fans of its popular show Orange is the New Black by releasing the third season of the show 6 hours ahead of its originally scheduled middle-of-the-night premiere. As is typical for Netflix, all the episodes are up just waiting to suck you in. And it's not just streaming services posting an entire season at once. NBC has put all the episodes of its Charles Manson drama Aquarius online. Marketplace's Adrian Hill looks at what you might call all binge, all the time you give us 22 hours, we'll give you the whole series.
When you cozy into your couch for a multi-episode, multi-hour reunion with Piper Chapman this evening, or this afternoon, or even this morning, take comfort.
Maybe this is exactly where I am supposed to be right now.
You're in good company. Well, at least you're in my company. We don't know how many other people binge watch Netflix shows. Netflix isn't generous with its data, which may be part of the reason NBC is doing its own come and get it experiment with Aquarius.
I think what they're looking for is information.
David Bushman is the television curator at the Paley Center for Media.
I get the sense that everyone's watching. CBS, Fox, CW, and so on are all watching to see what happens.
We're special. We're powerful. We can change everything. I'm Charlie Manson.
All right, don't oversell it. Sure, it's a big deal that NBC posted the entire season of Aquarius online at once, Netflix style, but it doesn't change everything. It seems, at least from the outside, this is not going to be the show that rewrites all the rules. Bushman doesn't think we're headed to a world where every show is instantly bingeable from the moment of its creation. But television and the way we watch it is changing fast. Grant McCracken is an anthropologist who studies American culture and has researched binge watching for Netflix. He expects more and more experimentation.
We have this idea that there'll be one set of standards, and I think that's what we're on the verge of now, is a world where there is no single set of standards.
Throw out formulas for length, storytelling conventions, style, when and how often episodes are released.
And I wonder if we're not just a few years away from a television in which all of that variability is built into TV as well.
Changes in what we watch and how we watch require a change in marketing and how what we watch gets paid for. But if producers figure that out, television is only going to get more and more fun. Now, I got to go. I got some binge watching to do. I'm Adrienne Hill for Marketplace.
And the Federal Trade Commission says it's settled with a guy who raised $122,000 through the crowdfunding site Kickstarter and never delivered. It was supposed to be a new board game. The FTC is trying to put its foot down with scammers using various crowdfunding systems. In this case, the man doesn't have the money to repay those who contributed, so that's that. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.